Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The esteemed and lovely and talented Hub Arkish.
Hello.
Hub Arkish.
An experienced NFL reporter with decades of experience.
670 The Score's NFL insider.
Hub is excellent at his job and should be on TV somewhere because he doesn't have a face for radio, but that's for another time.
Shaw Media and Pro Football Weekly.
I'm looking at the text line here at 67011. And the first one I see from a texter in the 309 area code, Hub Arkish is an idiot, blah, blah, blah. Made a huge living talking football. He's constantly wrong. Anyone can do postgame. Well, thanks. Actually, the last thing I said before we finished the pregame is I expect the first half is going to be pretty ugly, but they should be able to come back and win it. I think that's pretty much exactly what happened until they couldn't win it late in the game. Not that it matters. You know, obviously, texters are just angry, so they can take it out on me or whoever they want.
Hub Arkish, not getting better than this.
Hub Arkish with McNeil and Parkins on 670 The Score.
This hour on The Score brought to you by Seattle Sutton. Your good health is their true mission. Talk to Hub every Tuesday at this time on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. You hear him on every show. You hear him on Bears pre and post. And he's with us now, McNeil and Parkins on The Score. Hey, Hub.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
We are outstanding. We're discouraged by the fact that officiating continues to dominate conversation, but how can it not when you look at how the Lions were screwed last night? Because it's not only you hate to see a team get screwed, it screws the Bears and it screws the Vikings because the Packers are a-coming, tra-la-tra-la.
Yeah, I mean, it's a problem. There's no question about that. I do think, though, in this case, as much as the officiating is frustrating and a problem, the Lions should have won that football game anyway, and they didn't. They had a number of chances in the first half before the officiating became an issue. Their +3 turnover takeaway, they only turned that into 9 points. You know, the five men on the field that extends a touchdown drive for the Packers is not on the officials. So I get your frustration. I share it. You know, I mean, they're bad calls. I did not know until last night. I was there doing the game for Westwood, and Rob Demoski was the pool reporter, talked to Cleek Blakeman after the game, and he explained that those calls on Trey Flowers, that the rule, in fact, is hands to the head or neck area. I had never heard neck area before. Now, it's still an awful call because he wasn't on the neck either on the last one. You know, you hear players and coaches say it all the time. You got to overcome that stuff. You got to go out and get it done. The Lions aren't ready to win games like that. And so as much as it's frustrating to Bears fans because the Packers caught some breaks last night, Aaron Rodgers was the difference in that game, not the officials, I thought, anyway.
Dave Wanstead told me earlier today, this was off the air, that, because I didn't know this, with a hand inside the shoulder pads, as Flowers had it, underneath the collar of the shoulder pads, I thought that was illegal. He says, it's not if you're making progress to the quarterback. Then they could call that illegal use of hands, horse collar, if it's side to side or from behind. But as long as you're making progress, and that just proves how difficult this job is, because we've been watching this game for 40 years and we don't know all the rules.
Mac, I just spent, the media, got to visit with the assistant coaches today. I got back from Green Bay, went right to Lake Forest and talked to Jay Rogers for about 15 minutes, the Bears D-line coach. And he didn't want to flat come out and say it, but he's the D-line coach, and he wasn't even certain about the neck part. Now we're getting Wani, with a different interpretation. The rules are pretty clear, and, you know, I'm sure Wani is right about that. But the clarity of the rules isn't the problem. You don't have two officials calling it the same way from week to week. And in the case of Trey Flowers last night, I felt bad for the guy in the locker room after the game, because he said that those two penalties were on my signature move. He said, you know, we discussed this with the officiating crew prior to the game. That's what they're doing, talking out on the field there. And so it certainly is harder and harder for these coaches to coach their players the right way, for the players to play the right way, and then to go out there and 1 week something that's legal isn't legal the next week, you know, clearly the league's got to do something about it. And I think there are so many people trying to fix it right now that we're getting confused by all the potential answers. To me, it's real simple. It's the Belichick rule. Forget the eye in the sky. There's problems with that. Forget which calls you're going to replay. Give each head coach two or three challenges per game and let them challenge anything they want, period. Because you're never going to get it perfect. I mean, we see replays where they overturn correct calls or they don't get it right. So what's the next best thing? Let the coach pick the two or three pivotal points in the game where he wants to challenge it and try and win it for his team. If he gets it right, that's good coaching. And if he ends up in a situation later where he wasted a challenge, that's on the coach, you know, because there, I don't think there's anything you can do to make these officials perfect.
We'll get the head coaching perspective on all of this from Ron Rivera coming up at 4:30. Hub, obviously the news of the day is Akeem Hicks being placed on IR, earliest he can return week 15. Do you think the Bears can be the best defense in the NFL without him?
Yeah, I think they can. You know, they played the Minnesota game without him and played their best game of the season. And we've seen, you know, last year they played a couple games without Akeem Hicks and without Khalil Mack and played very well. This defense is not about one guy. Now, you know, you don't want to lose your second or third best player. That's never a good thing. They've known this. We've known this or should have known this from the minute the injury happened. I mean, if you saw it, there's no question that elbow was dislocated. I'll be surprised if he can come back week 15. But in the interim, you know, fortunately they get the Saints without Drew Brees. They're winning, but the offense has not been as dynamic as you're used to. The Chargers and the Rams are in the tank right now. You know, the Eagles, their offense can be a little scary, but even the Bears' offense is going to score on them. So I ideally, you don't want to lose guys like this, but yes, I think they can still be, if not the best, you know, top three, top five defense, even without Akeem Hicks.
When I inferred from your commentaries last year, Hub, you thought Hicks was the best player on the Bears' defense, unless I read you wrong. So I'm a little bit surprised you aren't a little bit more pessimistic about his absence.
No, I mean, Khalil Mack has been the best guy on the defense since he got here. I certainly thought Hicks was underrated and probably the second best, as we saw Kyle Fuller and Eddie Jackson blooming. And again, Mack, I mean, not a good thing.
Right.
I'm not
right.
Finding anything positive in it. But what I'm saying is that having watched these guys last season and even the first few weeks this year, there's so much talent at every level on that defense that I still think it can be one of the best in the NFL. Is it going to be as good as it could be with Hicks? Probably not. But it can get pretty close. And one of the reasons is because Bilal Nichols is a guy who still hasn't gotten anywhere near his ceiling if they can get him back healthy. Eddie Goldman and Roy Robertson-Harris are very good and still getting better. And I've been stunned by what we've seen from Nick Williams. I mean, he's been very effective. So, you know, none of that replaces losing arguably the best, well, one of the two, three best interior tackles in football. Mm-hmm. You can't really take them over Aaron Donald or J.J. Watt, but I think the three of them are right there. And so it's a loss, but I think they can still be very, very good.
Who do you think the best team in the NFC is?
Well, I don't think there's any question. It's the Saints right now. I mean, you look at what they're doing without Brees, and they're going to get Brees back in a couple weeks. That defense is not far behind the Bears the way they've been playing in recent weeks. And they've been good enough on offense with Bridgewater. It's not the same thing, you know, without Brees, but based on what they've been able to do with their number two quarterback and knowing number one is coming back soon, to me, at least now, they are definitely the team to beat.
Tell us some specifics about this New Orleans defense. We know Jordan, we know Lattimore, but a lot of guys.
Marcus Davenport.
Yeah, there's a few guys we know, but I have not had a chance to see them, what's making them so special very often this year.
Yeah, you know of Marcus Davenport because they traded up to draft him in the first round last year, I think at 14. He then got injured about week five or week six and didn't make a huge impact last year. He's back healthy this year and is getting better rushing the passer every week. Cameron Jordan's been one of the best defensive ends in football for 4 or 5 years now, and his play hasn't dropped off at all. And then even more dangerous up front, Sheldon Rankins, who I know I loved coming out of college, and a lot of folks did. He goes down last year. I want to say it was with an Achilles, and that was late in the season, and nobody was sure even if he'd ever be 100% this season. He's been 101% pretty much since the beginning of the year, so they are really dangerous up front. They are somewhat unknown, but very productive, probably play over their heads a little bit at the linebacker position. And then, you know, on the back end, Marshon Lattimore, one of the better cover corners in the league. The reason I don't rank them with the Bears, they're not as deep in the secondary as the Bears. They don't have the star power at linebacker, but with Akiem Hicks down now, as good as I think the Bears can be, you probably have to take the Saints front over the Bears. So they're right there in the conversation.
So what do you expect the Bears to be able to do in this game? We know they're going to try to do different things. We know they self-scouted. We know Matt Nagy said, you know, the problems with the offensive line was not just Kyle Long. What are they going to be able to do against the Saints?
You know, Danny, I mean, at this point, I'm guessing a little bit with everybody else because I think we tend to assume since he practiced yesterday that Mitch Trubisky might go Sunday. That's not a guarantee by any means. He was limited in practice yesterday. They didn't practice today. They'll practice again tomorrow. As long as they keep saying limited participation, then it's a coin toss whether it's him or Daniel. If he goes full practice, then we know it's going to be Mitch. But then the next question is, okay, but what's he going to do? He's an upgrade over Chase Daniel. There's no doubt in my mind about that. He was coming off his best performance of the year in spite of the one big mistake, the red zone interception in Washington. And so if he can pick up where he left off and continue to improve, all he's got to do is make a few plays and let the defense keep him in the game. They have to run the football better. And clearly the emphasis during this bye week / self-scouting period has been working on that running game and what was wrong. There's no way possible that Kyle Long is what was wrong with it, but Kyle Long wasn't playing particularly well. And so if Ted Larson or Rashad Coward, and my best guess right now is it's Rashad Coward, can step in and at least be more physical. And even if they make some mistakes, make a few big blocks here and there that pop open some big holes, if they run the ball better, and the Saints' defense has been very good against the run, that's going to help Mitch a lot. The thing that concerns me a little bit about Trubisky at quarterback, forgetting that we don't know what he's going to do throwing the ball, is that we do know he's not 100%. And even though it's the non-throwing shoulder, I got to believe they're going to discourage him from coming out of the pocket they're not going to want him to expose himself to any more hits on that shoulder than they have to. So it's really an unknown. But even as an unknown, I think they're better with Trubisky at quarterback than Daniel. And the focus has to be on improving the running game. Because the bottom line, guys, if they can't improve this running game, they're not getting much better at quarterback. When you're one-dimensional, it's just too easy for the defense.
Yeah, something I want to talk to Chico about in just a little bit here, too. Norv Turner giving Christian McCaffrey 22 carries for all of 31 yards, but shortening the game for his young quarterback the other day when they were in London. That was good stuff for me. Hub, we're 2 weeks from the trading deadline. If the Bears don't get better up front on either side of the ball, can Ryan Pace, does he have any flexibility to do anything with a trade?
Well, I mean, when you say flexibility, he has
control. He doesn't have much to part with, though. That's what that's the problem.
Yeah, so I think we're probably talking assets more than flexibility. You know, they got two number twos next year, which is the equivalent of a number one outside of the top 10 on most of the trade value charts that they use with these draft choices. So I suppose that's a possibility. I'm sure they don't want to do that. And you're specifying maybe trading for help up front. Guys, they're going to be okay on the defensive line. They're not going to make a deal, especially when you realize Hicks did get the extension and he's under, you know, contract with them for a while. So I wouldn't worry about that. Now on the offensive line, everybody wants help on the offensive line, and they're not going to quit on one of these tackles who both have paper for a few years now at reasonable prices for, you know, average to better than average tackles. They're not going to, you know, replace Whitehair or Daniels. So no, I don't think it's likely that they trade there. And other than the offensive line, you know, unless you're talking quarterback, and I don't think that's not going to happen. I don't see them being active in the trade market.
What about the trade market in general? We just saw Marcus Peters get traded. You know, there's Trent Williams rumors. There's A.J. Green rumors. Obviously, there was Kenyon Drake and everybody for the Dolphins. The Broncos are reportedly interested in trading some people. Who do you expect to get traded?
You know, the trade rumors on Trent Williams are being driven more by the teams that want help on the offensive line than Washington. They continue to be pretty adamant. Bruce Allen has said they're not dealing him. That doesn't make any sense, especially now that they've fired the coach. So I would look for Williams to possibly move. I think we have to ask the question. I'm sure you guys heard about the two trades the Rams made today. They are now without both starting corners, Aqib Talib with the broken ribs. I don't know if and when he'll be back. They trade Marcus Peters. Are they starting to sell? Are they starting to – they're not going to rebuild, but they may think this isn't our year. And so there's other guys that they could certainly deal there. You know, I don't even know if Todd Gurley's name should be taboo based on, you know, what they've done without him and based on how little he has been able to produce either for injury or lineup reasons and the fact that you got to give something to get something. So the Rams have to decide if they're going to be sellers. Cowboys have to decide if they're going to be sellers. The Chargers have to decide if they're going to be sellers. The flip side is that the Cowboys could very well be buyers if Stephon Diggs was still on the trade market. And if I'm the Vikings, if I was thinking about trading him last week, I'm absolutely making a deal this week because his value just went way up. And so that's a name that I would keep an eye on. We've seen the NFL get more active in trading in recent years, but it's still nothing like baseball or the other sports. So maybe a handful of deals, big names beyond Trent Williams and Stephon Diggs. I've heard that Shad Khan is not going to allow Tom Coughlin to deal Jalen Ramsey, which is interesting because if they don't deal him, they got to do a contract extension with him. But allegedly, what I'm hearing there is that the problems, even though we heard about this altercation, if you will, in the locker room between Ramsey and Doug Marrone, I talked to somebody real close to it last night who told me that Marrone is fine with Ramsey. It was a disagreement. You know, they're over it. He knows how good he is. He doesn't want to lose him. Apparently, it's Tom Coughlin who really wants to be done with Ramsey. And my understanding is that the owner is not going to allow him to move him.
What would you like to see come out of this week's owners' meetings, and what do you think will come out of it, if anything?
You know, Mac, I know people are looking at the officiating and looking at replay. That's not something they do at these fall meetings. You know, that comes from the competition committee, and they work on proposals for the big late winter spring meetings at the end of March. I think these meetings are probably mainly about continuing preparation for the CBA that's going to have to get done after next season. I think they're probably... are some concerns about a couple of the franchises and the health that they're in and whether they need help and what's going on there. You know, but I think it's going to be mostly less sexy stuff, if you will. I wouldn't look for any big news to come out of these meetings. There may be some stuff on player discipline and Antonio Brown and a few other things. But the big one, officiating and replay, I don't think they can do anything at these meetings because they don't have the competition committee there working with them.
Wanted to pass along a quote to you, Hub, from your favorite owner, Jerry Jones. He was asked if he was bothered that there's more discussion on the officiating from last night's game than the game itself. Quote, "The calls were the subject of most of the talk after the ball game, and they're the talk this morning. As long as they're talking, keep it going." What do you think?
I don't know. I mean, as long as who's talking, keep it going. I mean, I don't think you want the fans talking about this.
I think that's what he's saying. He's saying as long as you care and as long as you're talking about football.
Pitch away. You're talking about us.
I don't care if you're criticizing the officials or anything.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, listen, Jerry Jones has been a lot more successful in business than I have, and he's obviously subscribing to the theory that as long as we spell his name right, it's all good. I've never personally believed that. I think there is something to it. But in this case, all that talk is negative. And this is a game that has other issues. It has issues, you know, beyond officiating, dealing with player conduct, dealing with the Kaepernick question, which isn't going away, you know, dealing with the length of games. I mean, there's a lot of important stuff. And you don't want the most negative potential conversation out there to be what everybody's focused on. So I can't disagree with him because I know it's been a very popular theory with people who've been very successful. Again, as long as you spell my name right, it's fine. But in this case, all the conversation is negative. If anybody out there was saying, hey, I have an answer, this is good, I might agree with them. But in this case, I think they'd probably be better off if it could get toned down a little bit. I mean, you got people talking. Mac, I think you alluded to it when we came on. Not just the Lions. What happened last night could cost the Bears or the Vikings a
yep.
playoff spot. It really puts in jeopardy the integrity of your game. And so I don't think you want everybody focused on that. But, you know, listen, you guys know I'm not shy about going after Jones when I think he's being a doofus. But in this case, I have to respect his opinion because he's obviously been very successful working with that line of thought.
Hub, good stuff. We'll be listening.
Thanks, Hub.
Take care, guys.
See ya.
That's Hub Arkish with us. Astros still on top of the Yankees. 2-0 in the bottom of the third inning, by the way.
Yep. Gerrit Cole on the bump for the Astros. He's going to look really good in a White Sox uniform in 2020.
Or as the opening day starter for Joe Maddon with the Angels.
How about that?
That would work, too, I would think.
Two runs win this game?
Yeah. Yeah, two runs wins this game.
Taillights.
This game feels over. With how many strikeouts does he have? I see he's at 50 pitches, so he's working early. But you guys give me the box score there in a second. Do you agree that the Bears are getting ready to play the best team in the NFC? I do not.
I think they're among them.
I do too.
Yeah,
I think they're among them.
I think there are three or four teams that have, they are among them. The 49ers are among them, and I put the Seahawks in that bunch too. I didn't think I would, but I like what they're doing.
Yeah, and I put the Packers in the group.
But, that's number four. Yeah, all four of them.
Tremendous opportunity either way. For the Bears, then, to come out of the bye and get that stinker out of there from the Raiders game, if you could figure out a way.
I'd tackle 41.
Yeah, that'd be good. That'd be good. I'd cover Thomas.
Yeah, him too.
Okay. We could do this.
See?
It's not that. Come on, Matt Nagy. Hire us as consultants. Someone who actually is doing the job, by the way, only two strikeouts for Gerrit Cole, but someone who is doing the job, Ron Rivera. What does he make of pass interference? How do you go undefeated with a backup quarterback, commitment to running the ball, and much more? Old friend Ron Rivera next on The Score.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The Carolina Panthers come to London, England, win a divisional game, get revenge on Tampa Bay for the Thursday night loss week two. Thieves Avenue comes roaring back to life, and the Carolina Panthers will be 4-2 at the bye week after this 11-point victory. Incredible and meaningful as well for where the season may go from here.
It's been a remarkable display of just overcoming adversity by the Carolina Panthers.
The slogan is keep pounding in Charlotte, North Carolina. That's been the credo. I believe it started when one of their former players, Sam Mills, had cancer, and they still employ that. The year they went to the Super Bowl in 15, they started with a bad September, but after two losses, they've reeled off four in a row, and the headmaster, Ron Rivera, the former Chicago Bears player and defensive coordinator, joins us right now on The Score. Hello, Chico. How are you?
I'm doing good, Danny. How are you?
Outstanding. Welcome back to the mainland. Other than the ball game, did you do anything fun while you were in London?
When? No.
Yeah.
We had a good time. We really did. You know, my family came out as well, and it really worked well for us. You know, one of the things that we did was we changed our entire work schedule. You know, we brought the players in early on Tuesday of the week, and we started a normal practice session on Tuesday. We went through a normal session on Wednesday, traveled Wednesday night, got there Thursday, you know, did all our obligations, took care of business, had what we called a recovery day where we bring in 20 sports massage therapists, got the guys' legs worked, their backs taken care of, shoulders, all that stuff. And then we came out and had normal Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So, you know, it really worked well for us. We had plenty of time to do the things that we wanted in terms of sightseeing. And the guys really seemed to come in and play relaxed and just they played well. And I was real pleased with their effort.
That's interesting. There was a lot of discussion here in town a week ago yesterday because the Bears were just there and they decided not to go out until Thursday evening, which is fairly standard. A lot of teams do it that way. After your experience, I'm guessing you'd never do it differently again after the result.
Right. Well, what happened was we talked to a lot of different teams that had done it and kind of got their feel. And it was funny because we found that the teams that went later in the week, it was 50-50. But the teams that seemed to go earlier usually played much better. They said they felt more fresh. And the only other team that did it exactly the way we did was Seattle, and Seattle won. So we just kind of looked at that and said, you know what? That's the thing I want. And the reason I want to do it that way is I want as normal a Friday as possible.
Do you think a team could work over there full time?
I don't know if they could do it full time. I really don't. And I've heard where people have talked about the team that goes there is going to be the team that's going to split. You know, that going four home games there and four games at headquarters of the United States might be the way to do it. I don't know. The novelty of what the game is, I think, is what really attracts the British sports fan, because you're not going to be able to get 60 or 70,000 NFL fans flying over from the United States to UK. You're going to get a good contingency, but you're going to rely on the local sports fan. And right now, you know, you think about it: soccer, rugby, cricket, football, American football. I mean, that's kind of the order, I think. And we're trying to make a dent into that. That's why I think we invested in that stadium in Tottenham. Which was an unbelievable stadium, guys. It was fabulous. It was a terrific football surface. Our players really liked it. The facility was first rate. It really was a good football stadium.
There are several things I really love about the way your team's gone about its business recently, Ron. Christian McCaffrey's on a different planet than most guys who play the position. I love the way you're taking the ball away from the opponent. That's just how you win in this league. And what Norv Turner did with the running game, even though it wasn't working the other day, I wish I saw more of that in our guy here, Matt Nagy. 22 carries for 31 yards. To me, that's the stat of the day. Stay committed to it. Shorten the game for a young quarterback and let your defense catch its breath.
Well, the biggest thing and thing about sticking with the run really is again, they kept committing 8-9 guys to the box. And when you do that, you open up those intermediate passing lanes. Hard play action. Greg Olsen had a big day. DJ Moore had a big day, and Curtis Samuels just played out of his mind. I mean, when you're able to distribute the ball throughout all those guys, you have to continue to stick to the run. At least that's the philosophy that we had. And you know, and it's funny because I got asked the question off to the side, well, you know, you ran the ball so ineffectively, and I said, really? I thought our passing game was excellent. Yeah, your passing game was excellent. Well, how many of those completions were off of play action? See, that's the thing that people forget. If you're not trying to run the football, your play action doesn't exist anymore, and we're trying to be balanced. And I love Norv's approach. You know, I was fortunate enough to have worked for him in San Diego and watch what he does, and I see it, and he's so true to what he does and what he believes. I have no problem with that.
So what has happened? Because it seems like we were trending in a direction for every passing record to be broken, more passes than ever, more spread out than ever. And now some of those offenses that were most associated with high volume passing and spreading the ball out are getting grounded a bit. What are you guys, the defensive people, what are you learning?
Well, you're really learning about the combinations more so than anything else. You know, and the other thing, too, is a lot of this stuff is coming from college football, and everybody just wants to emulate what they're doing at Clemson and what they're doing at Alabama, and they're doing it, you know, these big powers. Well, the problem is in college football, the big powers dominate the recruiting. In the NFL, the recruiting is non-existent because it's all about draft picks and free agency. Okay, so at the end of the day, your athletes on offense can beat the athletes on defense in college football most of the time. Well, you can't do it in the NFL. You're talking about high quality athletes, 53 of them on each squad. So you're not lining up against, you know, against a guy that was not a blue chipper. You're lining up against blue chippers. And so I think that's part of the thing that's happened is that balance has come out. We on the defensive side, we understand, you know, how these guys have to attack us. So we're trying to attack the way they want to attack you. And so I think because of the players in the league are balanced out, and just, you know, the philosophies on the offense, on the defensive side is different from what those, you know, what is being seen in college, that you really can't take the college game and try and plug it into the NFL game.
Carolina Panthers head coach Ron Rivera, the former Bear, he'll always have a little bear in him, is with us on the Score Sports Radio 670. Ron, the Bears announced today Akeem Hicks is on IR at least until week 15, maybe 16. You lost a great interior lineman recently in Kay Short. You're surviving. That's, you know, Hub was just on with us, and we all like the depth, but when you lose a player of those players' magnitude, that's going to tax your ass over 16 weeks.
It is, you know, but we're very fortunate right now. Vernon Butler has stepped his game up. I mean, he's a guy that was a first-round pick. We've been waiting for him to come, and, you know, he's given us some good snaps, but he's playing very consistent right now. He has kind of filled that void for us, you know, and that's been huge on the defensive line. You know, we've had some guys around that have stepped up. You know, Don Terry Poe has really, really played very well. Kyle Love is getting his opportunity to play more. F.A. Obata, I mean, we've got a group of defensive linemen that we've just been able to plug in, and they've kept it up. And so, you know, the biggest one, though, has been Gerald McCoy, you know, the longtime Buccaneer who we brought in over as free agency has stepped up. He's assumed a leadership role. I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, the money we spent on a guy like Gerald is paying dividends as well now.
Hey, Chico, 30 years ago this NFL season, at Lambeau Field, I stood across from you at your locker, put a microphone in your face, and asked you to comment on the replay review of Packers quarterback Don Majkowski when he completed a big play across the line. And I had to spend a lot of time doctoring that audio the next day to make it arable, because you were more upset than I'd ever seen you. And I don't think I've seen you that upset since. Here we are, 30 years later. Yep. We are still bitching and moaning. And after last night, I don't know how they can't get together this week. You know, we're told there's other issues at the owners' meeting. Yep. But this is ridiculous.
Well, you know, the biggest thing that we have to do is we have to make sure we get it right as far as that's concerned, because it is ridiculous. It's unfortunate because it's, you know, we have such a great game, and the last thing we want is people questioning our integrity. And so we do have a responsibility of whatever's broke, whatever's not being done correct, has to be corrected, because, again, you know, the fans want to come and watch the game, and at the end of the day, you don't want them walking away going, oh, man, we got robbed, or, man, you know, somebody cheated on that. You just don't want that, and that's the thing that we have to be very aware of.
When it comes to pass interference being reviewable, that was a unanimous vote this offseason, 32 for 32. If that vote was taken tomorrow to keep this as a rule, how would you vote?
Well, you know what? It all depends on how they're going to tell us how it is. I mean, the way we voted, you know, we were looking at making sure we correct the egregious. Probably the most difficult thing we have right now is, what is the definition of egregious? Clear and obvious. What is that definition? And once, you know, once that standard is set, we've got to play by it. I mean, I'd vote for it, you know, because, again, I'd like to believe I understand what clear and obvious and what egregious is. So at the end of the day, that's what really has to happen, is we got to make sure everybody understands what the standard is. It's like when we cleared up, you know, the catch, no catch. I mean, that seemed to be the biggest sticking point we had for 2-3 years, and it took 2-3 years before we got it right. So now we have a catch standard, I think, that everybody understands much more so than we did previously. So this may take a little bit of tweaking and fixing, and people are going to get a little upset and not happy with it. But until, you know, we continue to work it and massage it, we're not going to get it right until it obviously becomes right.
And that makes perfect sense. And you're absolutely right about catch, no catch. What's interesting, what's happening now, though, like for this season, is that only one pass interference has been overturned since week 3. So are you comfortable throwing the challenge flag on a pass interference this year?
I will if I think it needs to be reviewed. I'm going to throw it. I mean, that's the truth of the matter. I mean, if I think it's egregious, it's clear and obvious, I'm going to throw it. I mean, it's in the rules. So at the end of the day, I'm just going to rely on what I believe, what I think. I mean, I was fortunate enough to play this game for 9 years, coach it for 24, so – you know, I've got 33 years of NFL experience, and I'm going to rely on what I know. And if I believe it, I'm going to throw it.
I thought last night, I understand Matt Patricia not wanting to throw it when Jones Jr. got mauled before the ball got there because of what Parkins just said. Just one of them overturned in 3 or 4 weeks. But God, Monday Night Football, what a perfect opportunity to put on stage how they're not getting this right. I wish he would have taken one for 31 other NFL head coaches and fans of the league and gone ahead and thrown it. Would you have thrown it in that scenario?
Well, again, I it looked like it was to me, and so if that's how I felt, I would have thrown it. If that's, again, if I felt that way, that's what I'd do. I mean, guys, I'm just telling you what I would do or what I would have done in those situations. You know, coach did what he thought was best for his team at the time.
Another thing I'm fascinated to get NFL head coaches' opinions on here is the blending of how we've always done strategy and what your analytics department is telling you, going for it on fourth down, going for two. I still don't think there's any coach, frankly, that's doing it enough and more aggressive in that vein. How do you balance what maybe the math says you should do and what your gut is telling you on the sideline?
Well, it's funny because that was one of the things that back in the 2013 season that I had a better feel for. And a lot of it had to do with the fact that I sat down with John Madden and we talked about, you know, those types of things. And he told me, he said, Ron, you've coached enough football, you've played enough football, rely on your experience. And that's what I've been doing for the last 7 seasons. And it's funny because last year, before we got heavily into the analytics, they went back and reviewed all of my decisions. And according to the analytics, only one time did I not do what I was supposed to do. So, again, it you know, if I think it was like I had 23 decisions and 22 out of the 23, you know, the analytics agreed with what I decided, which is awful nice of them. But at the end of the day, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, I really don't know if I need somebody that's telling me, well, you know, we've studied this and for the last, you know, 20 years, this is what we're, you know, what you should have done. I don't know if I really need somebody to tell me what to do because I've played enough. I understand enough. And, you know, at the end of the day, I'm the one who has to make the decision and I have to live with it. You know, I made a decision last year to go for it on fourth down. We didn't get it. And at the end of the day, I could have kicked a field goal. We lost by 3 points. And the analytics guy told me, well, coach, you did the right thing. And I thought to myself, how the hell can you say I did the right thing? We lost by 3 freaking points. If I kicked the field goal, we may have gone into overtime. You know what I'm saying? I mean, so to sit there and say, well, you made the right decision. No, I struggle with it. I really did struggle with him telling me that. I mean, it really kind of pissed me off.
Right, you got to give us some credit. We're 14 minutes into this thing, and we haven't asked you what you're going to do once Cam's ready to go yet.
Well, I'll have to wait until we get to that point before I decide what I'm going to do. I mean, at the end of the day, I tell everybody, guys, I'm living in the now. Right now, we're living in the now. What I can't do is I can't make any prediction as to when, where, why, or how. So until I am faced with that decision, I'm going to live in the now.
What has impressed you the most about the kid, other than his 0 interceptions in 4 starts and 4 wins?
Is his aloofness. I mean, nothing seems to faze the kid. I mean, it's hilarious. The first time he went into a game, we were playing Atlanta last year. He went in, and we start moving the ball with him because Taylor Heinicke gets hurt. So the kid goes in, and he has this series. And every time we'd run a play, he'd turn around and look at the sideline and start walking to the sideline. And then all of a sudden, he'd turn around and walk back. And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, he still thinks he's in freaking college. He's walking to get the signals from the coach, and the coach is sitting there talking to him on the mic. So we kick a field goal. He comes to the sideline, and I say, hey, Kyle, you don't have to come walking to the sideline, dude. We'll talk to you in the mic. He goes, oh, okay, cool. And he walked away, and it was okay. Here we go. But that's kind of him. I mean, he's one of those guys that things don't seem to faze him. He's got a lot of confidence in his ability. He's got a good arm. He can make all the throws. He's got touch. He's got a gun. So, you know, I think he's got a lot of confidence, and he reminds me of those confident quarterbacks that have a good arm.
You're obviously plugged into the league, and then the Bears got a team in your division that many think is the best in the NFC. Can you give us a scouting report on this Saints team?
You know, the thing that they really have is they have playmakers that do make plays. And that's really the thing that they've been able to rely on. You know, they're missing, you know, their trigger man, who I think is really one of the, you know, really good. He's a future Hall of Famer. Sean Payton's a terrific game planner. And right now, offensively, Teddy Bridgewater has come in and been very consistent. He's managed the games. He's made plays when he's needed to. But defensively, they've taken their game to another level as well. And Cameron Jordan, you know, I can't speak enough of him. I mean, he is a Cal guy, a Golden Bear. You know, I'm a fan of his, but he's really playing really well right now. And his teammates are feeding off of his energy on the defensive side.
Ron, great to catch up. Congrats on the four straight wins. Have a great bye week. Take Coach Stephanie out for a nice meal, will you?
Oh, without a doubt. Are you kidding? That goes without saying.
Buddy, take it easy, man. Thanks.
All right, guys. Thank you.
Thank you, Ron. That's Ron Rivera on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Bottom of the hour brought to you by Northwestern Football. Join Northwestern Football at Ryan Field this fall. The Wildcats are led by Big Ten Coach of the Year Pat Fitzgerald. They've got Ohio State, Iowa, Purdue, and Minnesota in Big Ten play. Single game tickets to see Chicago's Big Ten team on sale at nusports.com. That segment was also brought to you by Lakeside Bank. We are McNeil and Parkins on the Score. Think Chico's going to go back to Cam Newton?
I don't know what he's going to do. He won't tell me off the air either. Shocker.
I don't think he's made up his mind. And it depends how much longer Cam's out. My guess is a 5 or 6 game winning streak would be tough to mess with, even though I think it should involve way more than that. And Cam Newton, when healthy, is clearly more talented than Kyle Allen.
Yeah.
Coaches, they get to be creatures of habit, and you don't mess with a streak.
I know. You know, there are those who will be in Newton's camp reminding us of when he won an MVP. They also will tell us about how wonderful he's been in the Charlotte community. And both of those statements would be correct. That has nothing to do with what the Panthers have done over the last 4 weeks. This youngster has earned his teammates' respect. He's taken good care of the ball when he's thrown it. He's coughed up 4 of 6 fumbles have been recovered by the opposition. Got to take better care of the ball. But they're responding to him. And frankly, Cam Newton has been bad since their Super Bowl year of 15.
Well, right. I mean, it's only 2 games, but Cam Newton completing 56% of his passes. Kyle Allen, 66% of his passes. Cam Newton, 0 touchdowns, 1 pick. Kyle Allen, 7 touchdowns, no interceptions. Cam sacked 6 times in just 2 games. Kyle Allen sacked 10 times in 4 games. Quarterback rating of 71 for Cam Newton, 107 for Kyle Allen. It hasn't been close this year, but Cam was playing hurt.
Yes, he was. He had a surgery in the offseason. He was bad last year, though. He was bad the year before that. Plus, he's had some attitude issues. Rivera had to bench him for a start of a game because he violated team clothes regulations on the road. And I can't remember who he started in his stead, but the dude threw a pick six on the first play of the game.
Was it Heinicke?
No, I don't think
no?
so.
Okay.
Was it Derek Anderson?
Yeah.
It might have been Derek Anderson, but he threw just a little short out route. The receiver bobbles it. It's on the receiver, but the DB comes up, makes the catch, and runs in easily for a pick six. And I'm going, oh, man, all on principle, all because he violated dress code on the road. But sometimes coaches have the guts, the biscuits to stand up to a player, even when he's a team captain, and do that. I don't think anybody's above it.
No, I certainly don't either. Although, I don't know if I would bench him for dress code, but I understand Chico died on that hill.
There had to be more to it than that. It couldn't have been just a one-off.
Exactly. If the Bears defense can survive and thrive without Akeem Hicks, that and more coming up. Mac and Parkins on the Score.